James Corbett, who is a financial analyst, and James certainly is living in Japan. He's a Canadian, but he's living over there so he can give us an international view of what's taking place economically throughout the world. And of course, everybody was anticipating that the Federal Reserve System was going to cut back on its purchase of mortgage bonds and of treasury bills earlier this year. Certainly, the federal government, the Fed, is purchasing almost $500 billion worth of T-bonds a year. Then, because the other $500 billion is to fund the banks by buying mortgage bonds, bonds backed up by certainly home mortgages, most of which really aren't worth the paper they're written on. But this is a frantic effort to try to stabilize our monetary system. I suspect that the Fed is actually buying a lot of other bonds and giving money to other people to buy the bonds, because more and more countries really aren't that interested in buying long-term American T-bills, because they know the dollar is in trouble, and one of these days the whole house of cards is coming down. I want to get James's view on what's going on, and certainly his response and the response of people throughout the world when the Federal Reserve announced certainly about a week ago that it was going to continue buying T-bills and expanding the monetary supply and the funding certainly our government, just like the German certainly central bank did under the Weimar Republic, and of course basically kept the economy going for a while. But then eventually the whole thing came down and totally destroyed the economic infrastructure of Germany. And so they impoverished the German people. I fear we're headed the same direction. James, what are your thoughts?
Well, Dr. Stan, thank you again for having me on. And yes, unfortunately, you're right. The Federal Open Market Committee decided last week not to taper its quantitative easing. So basically, in normal speak, that means they're not going to cut back on the $85 billion a month that they're creating out of nothing to pump into the economy, at least into the T-bills and the mortgage-backed securities. And unfortunately, although people who are following the markets are probably sick of hearing about this already, we are living in an era that is defined by the Federal Reserve and what they choose to do or what they choose not to do, because unfortunately, there's just no way around it. The American economy is a central command and control economy these days, and it's only different from the old Soviet Union in a few respects, but unfortunately in the central respect of having a central bank that commands and controls the monetary supply of the nation is very much similar, almost indistinguishable. And this is a very sad state of affairs. It means that the U.S. economy is basically tied to the noose of the Federal Reserve and what they choose to do and what they choose not to do. In this case, they chose not to cut back on the amount of money they're pumping into the American economy each month, at least indirectly pumping into the economy each month. And that means that basically it's business as usual for the people who are drunk off of the punch that the Federal Reserve is supplying in their punch bowl. And this just means that the game of musical chairs that we're playing will continue for a little while longer, unabated, as it were. And in the result, as a result of that, we saw, of course, markets all across the board, equities and gold and other commodities as well, all go up in the immediate wake of this announcement, because suddenly everyone realized, hey, wait, we thought they were going to cut back. We thought the dollar was going to be strengthening again because they're cutting back on the T-bill purchases, etc. But it turns out that's not the case. So everything resulted in at least a little momentary upspike, and now things are calming down again. But we're back to the new normal of waiting for the next time the Federal Reserve decides to announce whether they're going to taper or not.
And the only thing that, in my estimation, is keeping certainly our economy going is simply this pumping of this large amounts of money into the economy. And it works, ladies and gentlemen. It works in the Weimar Republic. They kept the German economy going for a good while until it collapsed. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett. And basically, of course, here we're talking about what's going on with the economy, and basically the only thing that's keeping our economy going today, because contrary to everything you're hearing, the economy is not good. The only thing that's keeping our economy going is the fact that the Federal Reserve System is pumping $1 trillion a year into our economy, $45,000 a month into mortgage bonds, and $40 billion a month certainly into T-bills, and how much else they're buying, we don't know. Everything is done secretly. And they may very well be giving other countries money or lending them money so they can buy the T-bills. But if we were not pouring all this money into the economy, the Treasury wouldn't have the money to send out Social Security checks and Medicare checks, because we're going behind approximately $1 trillion a year on average. We have a deficit of $1 trillion a year that they will admit to, and it's probably 3 or 4 times that much. But the average individual does not understand what is going on, because in my estimation, the media is controlled. And they control our reality, but one of these days we're going to have to see the world as it really is. And at that point, just as the people in Germany in the 1930s, we're suddenly going to realize, of course, that we're on a one-way road to destruction and the end of freedom as we know it. James, you pick up the story.
Well, I think, unfortunately, again, you're exactly right about that. It is the end of freedom as we've known it, to the extent that we've known it, and how much have we ever really known it in this era that has been defined by a central bank, which, of course, is one of the pillars of the Communist Manifesto. So maybe Americans can cogitate on that fact. But here we are with the Federal Reserve once again continuing to dictate what's happening in the economy, and even the various Fed presidents are starting to come out and talk about what this decision means. And now we have the Dallas Federal Reserve President Fisher just came out, and he delivered some comments saying that basically this means that the Federal Reserve's credibility has been undermined because they've chosen not to taper, even though they said they were going to several months back, and that this is creating uncertainty in the markets and is probably going to come back and bite them in the behind in the near future. So,
yeah, I think that this report that came out from the Dallas Bank, Dallas Central Bank, certainly we have a number of, I think we have 12 central banks in the United States. One of them is in Dallas, and basically they've been fairly accurate and fairly impartial trying to get the information out. And basically this central bank in Dallas, a branch of the central bank of Sydney, one of the 12 regional banks, has come out and said, we are on a one-way path to really destruction, and this whole thing is going to implode. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's James Corbett. And we were simply talking about the Dallas Regional Bank, and it's a branch of the central bank. It's in Dallas, Texas. And they came out with a report recently that it almost sounded like they were listening to a James Corbett on a weekly basis, because basically they said that, since the Federal Reserve is not going to cut back on the buying of the bonds and creating money out of nothing, this is a one-way path to the ultimate undermining of the fabric of our monetary system. And when the monetary system is destroyed, well, the nation is destroyed. Would you like to sort of develop on the ideas that they put forward and why it is so vitally important that people get hold of this report? It's up on the internet. And understand that here's one of the regional banks being very, very critical of the fact that the only thing that's holding our economy together is massive creation of money out of nothing and investing it in T-bonds, which will never be redeemed. Go ahead.
Well, I think you've covered it pretty well there in that summary, but yes, basically what this all indicates is that we are heading towards that real fiscal cliff, the one that they don't want to talk about. And of course, we're getting to that time of year where they're going to start talking about their deliberations over the budget and the debt ceiling and what have you all over again. And this seems to be an annual trend now, where every year they start talking about this debt ceiling and they threaten to shut down government, and then they come out with a last-minute deal, and that consumes the business and market headlines for the last few weeks of September. But I think the real story here is, again, the Federal Reserve and what it's choosing to do in terms of not tapering and continuing on with its quantitative easing, its $85 billion a month, because, exactly as you say, in the long run, this is the economic tsunami that threatens to engulf the entire economy. And this is what Dallas Federal Reserve President Richard Fisher was talking about recently. Also, the Kansas City Federal Reserve President Esther George came out and made similar comments recently, saying that this is, again, undermining the Federal Reserve's credibility and what have you. And I mean, there's a lot to be said about the undermining of the credibility and what that means. But I think the bigger underlying point is that this is continuing to create that tidal wave that has not taken off in inflation yet, because this money is not moving through the economy to the extent that that we might expect it to be, because everyone is still basically continuing to hold on to their money. People are still continuing to deleverage and pay down debts. So it hasn't made its way into the economy in a way that has created a massive inflation, at least not yet. But that is the ultimate end result of this continued printing. And it's really just a question of when. And they're not even letting up on the gas pedal, let alone actually hitting the brake. So we are heading careening towards this brick wall at the pace of $85 billion a month. And it looks like we're not going to be changing course anytime soon, even though we have a change in Federal Reserve chairman coming up in the near future. Ben Bernanke is due to step down at the end of January, but is likely at this point to be replaced by Janet Yellen, who, if anything, would be even more pro-easing than Bernanke was, and will probably continue that course unabated. So it looks like there's no real change foreseeable in the near future. And it looks like we're just going to watch as the Federal Reserve continues to run the American economy into the ground.
And I think people have to understand that all this money that is borrowed, you have to pay interest on. And basically, right now, we're paying almost $400 billion a year interest. But that's because the interest rate is so low. It's less than 3%. What happens when the interest rate goes up to 5%, to 7%? To 10%, and it has been up to 10%, I can remember it, over 10%. We'd be talking certainly about almost all the money the Federal Reserve was taking, all this money Treasury would be taking in, would be going to pay interest on the national debt. People don't understand the implications of this. There wouldn't be any money for Social Security or for Medicare or anything else, because all the money coming in would be going out for that. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Why don't people understand, James, the implications? Because basically, money that is created in America is based upon a debt, and that debt has to be paid in the form of interest. And they're keeping the interest rates down so that we can afford to pay the interest on the debt. But when the interest rates go up, why, of course, couldn't this simply bring the whole house of cards down?
It certainly could. And not only is it the federal government that, of course, has to pay more when interest rates go up, but of course, everyone out there has to pay more in terms of their own loans. And of course, mortgages are tied very much to the prime rate. So again, it really does depend on so much of the economy does depend on that number. And you're exactly right that very few people understand the real implications of the fact that that basically this is a loaded gun pointed to the head of the American economy that doesn't need to be there at all. Of course, the U.S. government, there's no conceivable reason of why they need to issue money in this way as debt that is then owed at interest. And as you say, $400 billion a year being paid in just in the interest alone on the debt, before anything else is paid off. And yet every time we get to the debt ceiling negotiations and the budget negotiations, they're squabbling and trying to cut back $1 billion here or $1 billion there from this or that program, whereas every single year they're paying hundreds of billions of dollars on a debt that doesn't even need to be there. There's no reason why the U.S. government has to borrow money in order to create money. But that's the elephant in the room that very few people understand, precisely because they don't talk about it. Monetary policy is one of those things that just simply is not talked about, because if people understood the scam that was being run by the banksters in getting the U.S. government to basically pay them for the privilege of creating money out of nothing, then I think people would revolt against that right away. And in fact, this is something that certain economists have come out and said, basically, this is the elephant in the room that economists are not allowed to talk about. If you talk about this, it's understood that your career is in jeopardy, that you will not be getting the Nobel Prizes for economics like Paul Krugman and the like, or being invited to the prestigious speaking engagements and the like, or getting the cushy jobs advising for the Federal Reserve, which is something that alone employs hundreds of economists each year. So one's career is very much tied to the fact that you do not talk about this, about where money comes from, because once again, that is really the elephant in the room. That is the issue that could truly change the course of the country. And for that exact reason, that's why it is never talked about.
And I would simply point out that I hope you'll get a pen and pencil out and write down Cloward and Piven, C-L-O-W-A-R-D, Cloward and Piven. There were two communists writing in the 1960s, and I think it was in The Nation or some similar liberal publication. They said, look, we want to destroy America, and because we can't, it's too strong. So what we'll do is simply spend it into oblivion. And basically, of course, they knew certainly that it had taken us, well, we didn't even have in 1960. We didn't have $1 trillion in national debt until 1980. We had certainly maybe $500 billion debt in 1960. But they said, we're going to destroy this country and destroy the whole infrastructure of this country through certainly spending and through debt. And they set out, and certainly the people who hate America, and it's not simply the communists or other people whose parallel organizations, want to destroy the infrastructure of our country and then centralize all power with Washington, D.C. to keep everything from crumbling and having riots in the streets. And what do you do it? By creating massive debt. George Bush created $5 trillion of debt, certainly in 8 years in office. Certainly, Barack Obama created $6 trillion of debt in 5 years in office. And we're on the way to the destruction of the economics of the system, the destruction of our pension funds, our annuities, our insurance policies, the destruction of the value of our currency. Do you think people really understand the implications of what's going on, James?
I certainly don't, because if this was widely understood, I think this would not be business as usual in Washington, and it would not be business as usual for most people. Because as you say, this truly is an existential crisis for the United States of America, and that existential crisis might not manifest in the next year or the next 2 years or 3 years, but it is there and it is coming, and it's basically a type of crisis that is constantly on the horizon and getting closer with each passing month. Now that the Federal Reserve is continuing on its blockbuster pace of quantitative easing, and just on the note of what you're talking about there about the gradual process that's been underway for decades to undermine the United States, I was reading a fascinating article in Salon, of all places, Salon.com, which is generally a quite liberal publication that tends to toe the Democratic Party line, but they had a fascinating article called Elite's Strange Plot to Take Over the World, in which they give quite a good overview of the sort of internationalist, globalist idea of trying to break down borders between countries and break down the idea of national sovereignty as a part of merging the world into a type of global or at least regional government system. And this was talking about, in the wake of World War II, how basically various of the NATO allies were talking quite seriously about a type of Atlantic Union, merging the United States with some of the Western European countries, and how that idea basically morphed and became GATT and then the World Trade Organization, and how it continues to feed into various organizations that were created more or less in the wake of World War II and the institutions that came out of that, including, of course, the United Nations. So it's actually a fascinating article.
I think it's important that you understand what's happening, ladies and gentlemen, is not happening accidentally. The people want to destroy America so they can bring about a world government. When they do that, they will destroy everything you spent your whole life for. And your pension, your annuities, your money, your bonds, everything, you're going to be destroyed by the inflationary spiral that's coming. This is not imaginary. They know exactly what they're doing. And, of course, if you are not positioning yourself now, why, of course, the vast majority of the people in America, just as the vast majority of people in the Weimar Republic, certainly before Hitler came to power, said it couldn't happen here. Ladies and gentlemen, certainly Jimmy Carter created a deficit of $200 billion during his 4 years in office, and Ronald Reagan criticized him, got elected, and then he ran up the debt $200 billion every year he was in office. We'll be back in a moment. Well, right now we have John calling from Northern Michigan. Hi, John. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I'd like to ask Jim about what's going to happen when the charter for the Federal Reserve runs out in December, I believe. And then one other comment, too.
Well, let's just take one thing at a time, John. We'll get to them all. But basically, of course, James, John is inquiring, what's going to happen? Isn't the charter, the 100-year charter for the Fed up this year?
There are a lot of people talking about this, but in fact, it is not true. The charter has been changed over the years to the extent that now it actually requires the Congress to stop the charter, to revoke the charter from the Federal Reserve. It is renewed automatically otherwise. So unless the Congress actually moves to stop the Federal Reserve, it will not just stop on its own. It doesn't even require a renewal of its charter anymore.
Okay, John, I have another question.
Well, I just wanted to bring up, you brought up, James, about every economy taking over regionalism. I believe Alex Jones' endgame that he put out in 2008 really breaks that down and really will give people an opportunity to see what they plan on doing and why they're over in the Middle East countries right now, taking out the dictators they put in and eventually breaking up these countries into smaller regions.
Well, I think we're in real trouble, John. I think people have to understand that our leaders have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is to this globalist dream. And when you understand that, so much of it makes sense, what's going on makes sense. And that's why, of course, why we're funding us in the Al-Qaeda in Syria and fighting Al-Qaeda in Iraq. You kind of have an enemy, and they've created the best enemy money could buy. Anything else you'd like to say, John?
God bless both of you, Dr. and James, and God be with your family.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you. Okay, and basically that was John calling from Northern Michigan. Sydney, James, is there an awareness of what's really going on throughout the rest of the world? Are some of the other countries really aware of the fact that there's a very real chance that the value of our currency is going to be destroyed and undermined if they're invested in American bonds, that they're going to be in real trouble? Why is Japan still buying so much in the way of American bonds? Why is China certainly not getting rid of all their American bonds? I would think that they would realize that down the line, they're going to lose dramatically in their investments.
Well, I think they do realize that. And I think that that is why we've seen such a curtailing of the purchasing of American bonds and the holding of American dollars in foreign reserves in recent years. So whereas in previous decades, Japan and then China were buying up American debt hand over fist. We've seen that really starting to curtail, so they're not buying as much anymore. And it's true they're not selling off of their American bonds at this point. They're not flooding the market with bonds and really tanking the American dollar or economy. But I think that is a strategic decision that's being made at the moment, because once again, the American dollar is still the world reserve currency, and the American economy is still the place where most foreign investment tends to end up, and the upsetting, the rocking of that boat threatens to really undermine for example the foreign exchange holdings of a country like China, which does have a strategic investment in America now, obviously, because that's where a lot of their exports end up going. So it is a system that creates this type of interlocking web that is interested in maintaining the status quo. And I think
hold that thought. We'll be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is James Corbett. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And James is saying that certainly China, Japan, in the past have certainly been frantically buying up a lot of America's debt. They're not buying up the debt as they were in the past. They're not necessarily selling it, or they may be changing from long-term bonds into short-term bonds so they can get out of them in a hurry. But they recognize, of course, that the monetary system of the world based upon the American dollar is in jeopardy, and so instead of certainly being the major buyers and investing tremendous amounts of Chinese and Japanese money in American bonds, they're just sort of holding their position, but they're buying very limited amounts. Would that be a fair assessment, James?
That is, and one can look at, for example, the list of the largest holders of American debt, and up until a few years ago, it was China, but that was surpassed by the Federal Reserve itself, which is now the largest holder of American debt. So there you go. It's now pretty much official that they're just basically printing money in order to fund the government. They're basically just monetizing their debt, which is always a pretty bad sign in any economy, but we're being told that this is meant to stimulate the economy and reduce unemployment, which is supposedly the aim of this quantitative easing regime that we're under right now, which is a pretty laughable task considering, A, how much these unemployment statistics are completely manipulated and fudged, and B, the fact that even within that fudged framework, it's not having much of an effect. And we saw that, for example, in August with some pretty dismal job reports and some pretty interesting revisions to previous job reports that have quietly revised all of those rosy and happy economic projections downwards over the past few months. So things are not getting better, and this was one of the ways in which the Federal Reserve has admitted that by saying, well, basically we have to continue injecting this morphine into the body of the American economy.
And you can keep just creating money out of nothing for a time and pouring it into the economy to try to keep it afloat as long as you can keep the banks from taking that money and putting it in the economy. But if they did, of course, the velocity of money will create an inflationary surge. So the banks are literally borrowing from the Fed for literally nothing. And then, of course, when they deposit the money with the Fed, they're paid not a great deal of interest, but they're paid at least some interest, so that the whole idea is prevent inflation at least for the time being. And then I fear there's going to be some major incident, and basically this money is going to be released into our economy, and you're going to see a surge of inflation that will begin to wipe out and impoverish our people. This is what happened in the Weimar Republic, until finally first people started bringing their money to the bank with the wheelbarrow, and people were stealing the wheelbarrows. They didn't want the money. They wanted the wheelbarrows because they had real value, and the money became worthless. People say it couldn't happen here, and I would ask, why not? Certainly God brings his judgment upon nations that turn against him, and in my estimation, America has turned against God. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we've got Frank calling from Salinas. Hi, Frank. How are we doing?
Good, thank you. I was wondering, about a year and a half or so ago, Cyprus banks, the government took like 5 or 8% out of every bank account. Did they also take that out of brokerage accounts and stocks and was it bank accounts only?
Where did this take place?
Cyprus.
In Cyprus, and they took it. Basically, I think they took more than 5 to 8%. What happened in Cyprus? Did James recall? As I remember, the government over there said if you had over 100,000 euros or something like that, they took a significant amount of your savings. What happened?
That's right. There was certain banks in Cyprus. I can't remember which ones, but the ones that were most in trouble ended up where if you had, I believe it was over 100,000 euros in your bank account, they took 47.5% of that, the amount in that account, basically.
I think that's absolutely right, Frank. It was not 4%, it was 47%. Go ahead.
Yes, so that was the amount that's over the so-called insured amount that is supposedly guaranteed in Europe generally, in the European Union zone, the Eurozone, which is 100,000 euros. So anything over that amount was basically taken out to the tune of 47.5% in order to recapitalize those banks. But as far as I know, that only was used in regards to deposits at those banks. It wasn't related to brokerage accounts or anything of that sort.
Okay, Frank, anything else you want to ask?
Yes. If all of the derivatives became worthless and stocks went way, way down, corporations went bankrupt, is there any chance that the United States would go into a depression instead of runaway inflation?
Hold that thought. As Frank's saying, look, are we going to have inflation? Are we going to have a deflation? I mean, some people say we're going to have a Great Depression, and well, we'll get to that subject when we get back here in just a moment. Our guest is James Corbett, and we'll be back in just a moment. OK, Okay, well, James, certainly the question by Frank, well, some people say we're going to have inflation, some people say we're going to have a depression. What are we going to have? Could it be that we're going to have a depression rather than inflation?
It's absolutely possible, and there are a lot of people out there who make the case that we are heading towards a deflationary depression cycle rather than an inflation. And I, for years, I've been on the inflation side of the argument, but honestly, as this continues to drag out and we continue to see a deflationary pressure, I think that I'm more and more convinced that it may end up being a type of deflationary depression. At the end of the day, it's kind of like asking whether the patient is going to die of the gunshot wound to the head or the stab wound to the heart. I mean, at the end of the day, the patient is still dying, so I think that's the important point of this. But it does have implications for what types of asset classes will perish first and how they will go down. So it does, I suppose, have some investment ramifications. But yes.
Could we have both? Could we have an inflationary spiral followed by a severe depression? Or could we simply just go directly into a depression? And then what would happen to all of this massive amounts of money that's out there?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of different ways this could play out, and it could, for example, head towards deflation until there's an inflationary event that could kick off the hyperinflation if that tidal wave of money that's been created out of thin air in the last several years actually starts to hit the markets. So it's the type of thing that could change on a dime, but it seems we're heading towards deflation at the moment. But again, it's always just the question of if and when that money does start actually moving through the economy, and given the amount of money that they've been printing in recent years, that would inevitably lead to a hyperinflationary spiral. And you still have people like Peter Schiff's and people like that who are continuing to argue that this is going to end up that way. And at this point, I'm not sure. But it is a fascinating debate and one that people should hopefully be following. But as I say, at the end of the day, I mean, it's still going to be the end of the American economy.
I think that, Frank, we're just going to have to wait and see. I don't think anybody knows. Just get yourself positioned. No matter what happens, so you'll survive. There's not much we can do about most people. Hang on there for just a moment. We'll be right back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Frank calling from Salinas. And Frank asked, is it possible we're going to, instead of having runaway inflation like they had in Weimar Republic, they're going to have simply a terrible depression. And basically, all this money is simply going to be pulled in and disappear and dissolve. And why the economy will simply collapse. And simply, James, being objective and honest, said, I don't know. This is entirely possible. There are many very good people who are warning about a depression. And of course, my feeling is we're going to have inflation, then we're going to have depression, and the whole thing is going to collapse. I don't think there's any question it's going to collapse. I think it's just a matter of how it's going to happen. And I think that basically James Corbett's position is we're going to have to wait and see. But we're in real trouble financially because we've abandoned any semblance between rationality and what's going on today. We have an entirely paper currency with absolutely nothing behind it. And we have people in positions of power in Washington, D.C., who hate America, whose loyalty is not to our country, but is to creating a global government. And the only way they're going to be able to do that is destroy the current government. And then out of the chaos that comes, the people will plead for the government to do something and restore stability. And they're all set to take control of everything and certainly then limit our freedom and with a promise for stability. And we'll end up, of course, with instability. We'll end up without freedom and we'll end up impoverished. That's, at least that's my thought. What would your thoughts on that be, James?
Well, I think, unfortunately, again, that's a bleak assessment, but it is exactly right. And I think we do have to address the root of this entire problem, which is that creation of money and the creation of money as specifically as debt owed to the bankers. And there's no way that such a system can end up in a positive thing for the economy. And just a little more on that deflation versus inflation argument. I did write an editorial for The Forecaster earlier this year, back in June, talking about the various different proposals for different types of depressions that have been thrown around, including the hyperinflationary debt spiral and the deflationary depression, and what types of investments actually maintain or even increase their value during these different periods. And in fact, during a deflationary depression, holding cash might actually be a better investment than anything in the stock market, for example, assuming that there isn't a debt spiral to the dollar during that deflationary depression. So again, there's a lot of different investment decisions that have to be made for different scenarios. So that's why it is important for us to continue trying to determine which way that it's going to collapse. But again, fortunately, at the end of the day, I think it does mean that either way, it's still going to collapse.
I think, Frank, we're just going to have to say you could be entirely right. We may go into a depression. Just certainly try to get yourself positioned so no matter what happens, at least part of what you've worked your whole life for will survive, okay?
Thank you, and God bless America.
God bless you, amen. Well, I'm not sure God is going to bless America. That's the problem. When a nation turns against God, God eventually does bring his judgment on that nation. But thanks for calling. Let's go to Heinrich from New England. Hi, Heinrich. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes. Yeah, hi. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I haven't heard from you in some time. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I know. And I didn't have minutes for a while, too, for about 4 weeks. But yeah, no time, no here. Yeah, I'm asking about the thing with Angela Merkel, okay, in Germany, all right? And I understand before, you know, I listen to the BBC and, you know, that they come on an FM station over here. I'm in, you know, in Connecticut area, so I can pick them up. And down the dial, way down the dial, like 90.91.1 or something like that. Anyway, they were talking just before the election. This was like Saturday and Friday. They were saying that never have before, or at least some of the Germans were saying that, a few were saying that never have before has there been a division, you know, between rich and poor in Germany. And I do think that's true, because even though I know East German merging has to do with it, but, you know, so what I'm asking about is the cut to the chase with the thing with Merkel. You know, I know she's a puppet. There's some things like about it, but she's obviously a puppet for the bankers, and she bailed out Greece twice. Is there anything, as far as what you've heard, as far as with the EU or people, you know, Germans wanting to get out of the EU? Because in some areas, there's some Germans that think they should stay in the EU because the EU may benefit them to a point. But what would be best? Would it be better for them to leave or get out of the EU, or is there a lot of hoopla? Is there strong EU resistance, you know, in Germany?
Let's just simply for our listeners out there, Mrs. Merkel is the premier of Germany, and she was up for election over the weekend, and she got about 40% of the vote. So basically, she has the majority of the three parties over there. She's going to have to form a coalition with either the Green Party or the Socialists over there. But she represents sort of the people, the globalists, and she is simply, as Heinrich says, she's a puppet. And she does what she's told to, basically. Whether this was a rigged election or a fair election, we have no way of knowing. But if you think these people would be above rigging elections over there, the last thing they would want would be for Germany to leave the European Union, because they want a United States of Europe as they want a United States of North America. And basically, Chris, they pretty want to use government to control people. And these people create wars. These people assassinate their enemies. And they assassinate people routinely over there that they don't like. This is the real world, not the make-believe world we live in. But of course, what are your thoughts about what's going on over there in Germany, James? Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I do. It's an interesting question. And I think that of all of the major players in the European Union, I think there is no country in which the general sentiment on the street is more against the idea of being in the European Union. I think Germans generally would be quite happy to get out of it, because there is the general impression, which I think there is an underlying reality too, that basically Germany is helping to carry some of the southern European nations on their back, looking specifically at Greece and Italy and other other places that continue to teeter on the verge of collapse and are being propped up by various types of bailouts that are largely being funded by the Germans and strong German economic production. So I think the average person on the street in Germany is quite against the European Union, but of course it's a political non-starter. It's not even on the table for discussion, really, under Merkel. And now that she's been elected, re-elected, I think we can see that that's going to continue not being talked about. But interestingly enough, I mean, we'll see that the Eurozone problems have basically been swept under the rug during this German election cycle, and I have a feeling they're going to be rearing their ugly head again in the next few weeks, especially because during the election cycle, the German finance minister, Schäuble, was talking about how Greece is going to need another bailout, and that was kind of, again, swept under the rug for the election, but I think that's definitely going to be front and center now that Merkel's back in her position.
Hello?
Yes, basically the whole thing is the people who control Europe, I said, is the Trilateral Commission, and basically they keep putting their people into key positions over there, and Merkel is one of their agents, she's not a member, but basically they want a United States of Europe, and they're not going to allow anybody to move out of there. They, as long as they can control the electoral process, as long as they can control the media, they can determine the future of Europe, but economically they're having real problems, just as we are, and certainly the countries in North and Southern Europe, certainly whether it be certainly Italy or Portugal or Spain or Greece or Cyprus, and even increasingly France, are having real economic problems. They're spending more than they're taking in. One of these days, that whole thing is going to face an economic collapse. But don't you worry, they have a solution. They'll bring in a strong, small man, maybe with a mustache, and he'll take over. I feel sorry for the people in Europe. They've been through it once, and they're going to go through it again, I feel, because, of course, the people, the trilateralists, want power, and they're the same force that created Adolf Hitler, and they're the same force which is working in our government today. Anything else you wanted to ask before we let you go, Heinrich?
No, actually, that's about it.
Okay, God bless you.
Apparently, you know, when you listen to the BBC, it sounds like there's a certain strong percentage of, you know, Germans that are for the EU, and then they don't want to dominate the EU, but I didn't know Greece needs another bailout. That's about it. I think they really should have got rid of her. Steinmeier may be a puppet also, but there was no real strong contender, though. I heard it weeks before. I mean, you know, she does have to share a sort of split, you know, with the other, form a coalition with the other party there, but more or less, she really won by a landslide.
Heinrich, the thing is that they control who the candidates are. If you had a strong contender, you would never hear about them. God bless. Thanks very much for calling. And let's go quickly to Jerry, who's calling from Spokane. Jerry, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, kind of both, Dr. Stand. It's been recently announced, although not very loudly, that Poland has confiscated half of that nation's private pension fund. So first we have Cyprus confiscating bank deposits, and now Poland confiscating pension funds. I feel these may be trial runs for this country to seize our 401ks and IRAs. Your thoughts, Mr. Corbett?
What about that, James? And I think it's a very valid point that Jerry from Spokane is bringing up, and of course nobody's talking about the fact that Poland has actually seized a significant part of the pension funds. I mean, people work all their life for a pension fund, and then the government comes in and seizes them and says, look, we need the money, you know, we don't have enough money, we're just going to take it here. What are your thoughts on that?
Unfortunately, I think this is a type of blueprint that will and can be used in the future by other governments, including, of course, the United States government. And I think that that's the crown jewel that they're working towards, although they have to do it very carefully. But just like the Cyprus bail-in provides a type of template that, in fact, has already been talked about and to some extent worked out at the international level through a subsidiary of the Bank for International Settlements, which has been talking about this type of bail-in where you take half of the savings or what have you of the customers in order to recapitalize the banks. That's all, they're already working on international agreements about that type of thing. Well, I think that the seizing of the public pension funds in Poland is another worrying sign that people should be keeping their eye on, because unfortunately, this is, I think, ultimately the game plan for the United States as well.
But I think, Jerry, what you have to understand is they're already doing this. They're taking all the money out of the Social Security. There is no money in the Social Security. They've already spent it. There is no money in the Medicare fund. They spent it. What they've done is they put IOUs in. They say, well, certainly they're good. I mean, we've got government IOUs. They're as solid as the government. But the trouble is the government doesn't have any money. In fact, if the Fed were certainly creating money out of nothing and then buying up the bonds, why would there wouldn't be any checks for half of Social Security and half of Medicare? They've already done this here, but nobody tells the American people. Anything else, Jerry?
This should be a wake-up call for the people in this country to get their money out of IRAs and put it into gold and silver.
God bless and thanks very much. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I think there's a great deal of wisdom in what Jerry's saying. Now we do have Joseph calling from Georgia. We'll get to Joseph in just a moment. And if you're out there and you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But James is kind enough to come on with us, so I'm going to ask James if he'll tell our listeners how they can subscribe and get his information out of the International Forecaster, and then how they can certainly get hold of his own. James actually publishes a weekly financial report, and he has a lot of information on the Internet. How can people get your information from the International Forecaster? How can people get your information directly?
Well, people who are interested in the International Forecaster should go to the website, theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And there you can see some of the sample articles and editorials that I've and other contributors have written for the publication. And you can also get a introductory copy if it's your first time subscribing. So I hope people will check that out and subscribe. It comes out twice a week. It's about 30 to 40 pages of information. So a lot of information coming out on a twice a week basis. If people are interested in that, obviously you can go to the website, or if you would prefer to write in, you can write in to P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. And people who are interested in my own work can go to CorbettReport.com, where I have thousands of hours of audio and video media available for completely free download there. If people do want to support my work, I have just released a new DVD. It's the 2011 Video Archive DVD with about 84 minutes of footage on here, including some of my best video reports from 2011, including 9/11, A Conspiracy Theory, the video that I did on the 9/11 anniversary in 2011 that so far has over 2 million views online. So a very popular report. It's now available for the first time on DVD. People can find out more information at my website, CorbettReport.com.
Okay, that's CorbettReport.com, and you spell Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, C-O-R-B-E-T-T. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And we've got Joseph calling from Georgia. Hi, Joseph. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, Dr. Stan, how are you doing? Just something along them same lines. I got this booklet by Judge Dale, Secrets of America, Great American Adventure. And okay, just real quick, in 33, Emergency Banking Act, hypothecated all property found within the U.S. to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve Bank. So then fast forward 80 years, and it says that November 2011, Obama and all but six congressmen voted to repeal the Bill of Rights, and the February 2012, same group repealed the First Amendment. The reason nobody heard about it is because Obama ordered a news blackout. Both incidents, however, were reported on the Internet Natural News. I've never heard nothing about that.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, Joseph, there is no place where they say we're going to repeal the First Amendment, these other amendments, but thanks very much. And basically, James, you've only got a few minutes now. Why don't you go ahead and give us your view of what's going on and what people should be doing to protect themselves?
Well, I think you're right. I don't think they'll ever come out with a document saying we've repealed the First Amendment or what have you, but they are doing it by fiat, if not by decree. I think we see...
You're absolutely right. In other words, basically, they're not going to come out and do that, but they're doing it by decree. In other words, basically, they're undermining certainly our freedoms in every step. They do not believe in freedom. They want a centralized control over every aspect of our lives. And they'll leave the First Amendment there. They'll leave the Second Amendment there. They'll just modify them, but go ahead.
Exactly right. And we've been talking a lot about the economic gloom and doom that comes with an economy that is centrally commanded and controlled by this privately owned central bank that, of course, only works for and in the interests of the banksters themselves. So I think the problem is easy enough to understand. And the solution, again, has to be the opposite of what the problem we're facing. And if the opposite, if the problem that we're facing is centralization, then the solution to this problem has to be decentralization. It has to become about what we can be doing within our own communities and with the people that we know and trust around us to actually build up our own economy that has nothing to do with the economy that they want to get us latched onto and unfortunately have so far succeeded in doing for the past century of the Federal Reserve. So again, I think that the real solutions start at home, and they start with local farmers markets and the like, and ways of trading with people around you in order to build up the local economy. And if that can be done in an alternative or a complementary currency, that's even better, because again, that's not something that's being dictated by the Federal Reserve. And in terms of holding on to long-term savings, once again, gold has retained its value for thousands of years. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And it's always a good place to store, I think, long-term investments. So I think that's where we have to be heading as a society, heading away from this enslavement to the US dollar, which of course is just a Federal Reserve note that's printed out of thin air, and more towards what we can actually do to build up the productive capacity of our own economies.
I certainly agree with you, and basically, as far as certainly what the future holds, we have any idea how long it's going to be before we get into serious problems. We're just going to have to wait and see. But basically, of course, we see these massive debts that are certainly accumulating $1 trillion a year. And basically, they say, oh, well, things are lots better. We've got a $670 billion deficit this year, but that's because they haven't added to it for about 3 or 4 months. It's just done. Unbelievable. Yeah, figures don't lie, but liars can sure figure. I mean, it looks like we're averaging about $1 trillion deficit a year, and all of that has to be, you have to pay interest on it. How long can you continue doing that, especially if the interest rates begin to rise?
Well, when the interest rates begin to rise, I think is when we're really going to see them having to pay the piper as when it comes to this debt. So I think that's going to be one of the harbingers of this. In terms of how long that will take or time frame for that, I am very reticent to do that, because every time frame or prediction I've ever seen any economist make has turned out to be wrong. So I don't give a prediction in terms of how long they can continue to do this. It depends on what weird or strange activity they come up with next, or what strange game plan they come up with to try to extend this out. And maybe they can do it another year, maybe they can do it another few years, but at some point I think that they're going to have to pay that piper, and I think the interest rates are going to be the canary in the coal mine for that. So when we start to see them spiking upwards, I think that's when the entire economy is better start bracing itself for what's coming.
And I think that you take heed what James just said. Certainly the interest rate, especially the interest rate on the 10-year T-bill, is a canary in the coal mine. What's the interest rate on the 10-year T-bill? What's the interest rate on the 10-year T-bill? What's the interest rate on the 10-year T-bill? That is a canary in the coal mine. Parting thought, and we'll let you go.
Well, once again, I just hope that people are able to work against this system, because it is not a system that's in your favor, and you can play games within it to try to invest and earn money in the stock market and the like. But at the end of the day, it is a fraudulent system that's based on the ignorance of the people. And so I think the counter to that, once again, is spreading the awareness and information. So if you find this information useful, please support it, and please support Dr. Stan and the work that he's doing in bringing this awareness to others.
God bless, and thanks very much, James. We'll look forward to talking to you next week at the same time.
I'm looking forward to it, too.